Blog Talk Radio.
John L. Brown, author and filmmaker, native of Lake Charles, Louisiana, is taking his expose on race relations in America, Mentally Blind, Open Your Eyes, to another level by doing a documentary entitled The Mentally Blind in America. The documentary will open the viewer's eyes to homelessness, poverty, hunger, the real rules of the criminal justice system, and other poverty-related issues that challenge underemployed, unemployed, and homeless people in American post-recession. The Mentally Blind in America, a documentary, will enlighten people of color and people in poverty on how to restore their credit rating and expunge their criminal records. The Mentally Blind in America, a documentary coming this fall. Real people, real stories. The Mentally Blind, Open Your Eyes, a documentary on race, poverty, the recession's aftermath, and more. Follow our post on Facebook's The Mentally Blind in America. The Mentally Blind in America.
Good afternoon, everyone. I'm your host, Author John L. Brown, and I have my co-host, Ms. Jacqueline Allen, better known as Ms. J.
Hi, good afternoon.
And today we have an exciting guest, Mr. Dixon White. This man here is really doing some absolutely great work out there, you know, in the United States, throughout the United States, that is. And I would like to ask Ms. J if she would take the pleasure on bringing Mr. White on the show.
Yes, good afternoon. First of all, welcome, Mr. White, and thank you, everybody, for joining us this afternoon. Before we get started, why don't you tell the audience a little bit about yourself, something they may not know from social media, and then from there we're going to jump into dialogue and talk about the things that you're doing right now.
Well, first, thank you guys for having me on your show. Very honored to be here. I really appreciate it. Yeah, my name is Dixon White, and I've been doing racial justice work for, I don't know, many years now, I guess. 15 years officially, but more serious about it in the last 15 years. But just a Southern guy, I was raised in a small town in Tennessee. I was raised to be a racist, and I was able to sort of put that behind me and kind of go the opposite way and start fighting for racial justice. And basically, I spent my time lecturing white folks about white supremacy and racial injustice and how we can try to fix it. And so that's a little bit about me.
Okay. Awesome. So when you, I'm going to jump right in, play devil advocate here. So when you say you talk to them about fixing it, let's elaborate on that. Because, you know, as we spoke earlier, like, for instance, someone may say, well, you have no idea what it feels like to be discriminated against as a, you know, black person or African-American person. So when you say that you're teaching or changing that, trying to change that mindset, let's address that, because like you say, you only speak to, you know, Caucasian people. You don't speak to black people. You speak to your own people. So what is the premises of your, you know, conversation or your discussion as far as trying to change that mindset, especially after being raised to be racist?
Yeah, what I do is, and what I've been doing the work mainly on social media, and then back in April of 15, I did a couple of videos, just kind of like an experiment, posted them on YouTube. I used a heavily Southern accent. My background is acting, and to be honest, I'm more comfortable doing characters than I am talking in my own regular voice. So I kind of come out of my shell more when I'm in character. So anyhow, I did these videos, used a heavy Southern accent, and thought I'd get a couple of views, and they went viral, to my surprise. And now they've had maybe 20, 25 million views, you know, social media combined, 25 million. And it's been overwhelming for me, and especially in the beginning. I went through a lot of just crazy public things, just a lot of media attention, and then harassment, death threats, cyberbullying, and then also just an outpouring of love just because of these two videos. So I decided to use that, and I started a challenge, and I made another video basically challenging white people or anybody that wanted to start a conversation using a video on social media to have a conversation about race. And so I've continued to use videos and to try to basically reach out to white America to address white supremacy. So that's kind of what I've been doing in the past you know, basically in a nutshell.
Yeah, I listened at a couple of your videos myself, and they're very powerful, you know, really. Now, but I wanted to ask you one question. Now, when you putting those videos out, you know what, you know how you feel. I mean, do you feel whereas though is this is needed, you know, or what?
Yeah, I think that you know, white folks have gotten very comfortable in denial racially, and I think that's our problem. Is that you know, we live in apathy as far as the white community. I'm not saying all white folks. I have to put up that disclaimer because people think I'm stereotyping white people, and I'm not. Or people say I hate white people, even though I'm white, even though I love my family and my white friends. But so I have to put out this disclaimer. When I say white people, I'm saying the, you know, collectively, I'm saying the community, the culture. Is what I'm referring to. So white culture, mm-hmm. you know, for 400 years has been living in basically apathy and denial and delusion racially. So any time, basically white people are illiterate racially. So any time white folks can have a conversation about race, I think that's a good thing and a necessary thing. And you'll even hear all the time I hear white people tell me, you know, they'll come up to me and or, you know, online and they'll say, if you want to fix racism, just don't talk about it. So that's the mentality of too many white folks. And what I always say is, if you have a cancer, would you address it or would you ignore it? Because racism is a cancer. It's just that it's not – white supremacy doesn't affect white people in a negative way. It benefits us. And so we're not inclined to want to address it. But just trying to get white America to take responsibility racially is what I've been trying to do.
That's a big weight on his shoulders. Yeah.
Yeah. So, in your view and what you see around the world, how you think that Caucasians can come in the African Americans communities and help them uplift the communities? What can they do?
You know what? I can just tell you what I have asked white America to do. Really, six things, but to make it easy so people don't forget and to make it not complicated. Three things is what I've asked white America to do. Number one, if we could just get to the point to where that we could acknowledge that white supremacy is a real thing, that people of color know what they're talking about with their lives racially. They understand their own experiences. So we need to believe people of color, and we need to be able to acknowledge the problem that we have, you know, systemically, culturally, in our country regarding white supremacy and how it works. Number two, I ask white people to act to address white supremacy, to not ignore racism. If you see it, if you encounter it, if you witness it, whatever you have to do, if you have to protest, if you have to, you know, take action, to act, to say something, to stand up, to do something. And number three would be just to simply educate our white brothers and sisters about the truth. So that's what I've been, that means teaching your children at an early age. That, you know, what I would love to see happen, and I don't know that it's ever going to happen. I hope that it could. But what I'd love to see happen is our educational system teach every child the truth historically and racially about what's actually happened and is happening in our country from the point of view of race. And so because our history is so whitewashed, our education is so whitewashed. So we can teach the real truth, the genuine truth, and teach anti-racism because white supremacy has been here for 500 years. But, you know, we ended slavery, but we never ended the culture and the system of white supremacy. It still lives today. And in my opinion, it's the most neglected evil of our time because it's never been dealt with. So we have a lot of indoctrination. As a white community, we have a lot of programming, and we have to be deprogrammed. And this has to be acknowledged, and there has to be action, and there has to be education. So those are the three things that I've been trying to get white America to do.
Those are some valid points. Those are some powerful and valid points. And, you know, being, you know, I can say black because I'm black, but being black, I think some of those points even can be directed to us as black people, because some of us still, we act like we're in denial too. We act like racism doesn't really apply. It's just a thing. You know, we have these clouds. We're walking around sleepwalking. You know, as Don says in his books, we're mentally blind. So everybody plays a part with our own blindness. And, you know, we all have to be open-minded. We all have to be realistic about really what's going on. Because, like you said, it's like having a disease and nobody, or cancer. I know I got cancer and I know this can cure it, but what I'm going to do is I'm going to do this over here because I know I'm going to die anyway, so I'm not going to worry about curing my problem. We're looking for a solution to my problem. So, you know, right, that works that way on both sides. So that's really a powerful thing that you're taking that stand, because it can be very dangerous, you know, especially with this Donald Trump time. A lot of people, white supremacists and other things, they really feel empowered because some of the words that he's using, some of the comments he's making about other races. So a lot of people are feeling this is a time of empowerment. So it really is a dangerous time for you as well, because you're talking one talk and they're saying we're about to have white America again. And you're saying, no, it's everybody's America. White people didn't build it. They just live in it, you know. And so it's kind of strange. You know, you put yourself really in a pretty dangerous position, but an honorable one, because you can't have change without dialogue. You can't have change without putting the truth out there. So I salute you for that.
Well, thank you. Appreciate it.
You was right on that, Ms. J.
Thank you. After talking to black people and just knowing how it operates, it can become internalized, you know, unfortunately. And that's another downside of the whole thing. And it's global. It affects, you know, almost every nation in the world. It's gone global. It started out of Europe and it went into every continent of the world, you know. So it's a global thing.
And, you know, me, myself, my view and my observation on all this, which what you're talking about, I think there's a lot of white folks wouldn't mind coming forward and saying, but I think, you know, and talking about it, but I don't think that they're comfortable with it. That's the problem.
Yes.
I don't really think that they really that comfortable. It's just that you took a really big step. And I'm going to tell you why. Because I'll be on Facebook a lot, you know, social media, other sites and things, you know, because I'll be advertising to about 250 different sites. And I'm going to tell you, since you did that video, I've seen as more and more and more and more white folks coming out and start talking about, well, we need to stop that being racist. We need to stop this. Mm-hmm. We need to stop that. It's more. So I think that's a good thing that you did, Dixon, really. You know, and if we can all come to the table, you know, and talk about some of these solutions, you know, because, well, black folks, you know, well, number one, we feel as though we got the short end of the, you know, well, not the majority of your black people feel as though they got the short end of the stick. And if you look at the communities, you know what I'm saying, is you know, they got some valid points. Number one, yes, we was freed as, you know, our ancestors was freed and everything, but we still was left on it. We wasn't on an equal playing field because we was left with nothing, no money, no nothing, no education. Half of them couldn't read and write, and they had to struggle. Now, right now, I think we came a long ways, but it's still a long ways to go. You know, it's still a long ways to go. But we're doing pretty good as African Americans. So you know, we're doing better. Let's just put it that way. And we can do even much better.
What y'all have been through, it's amazing how good you are doing, considering what y'all been through. You know, considering what this country has put people of color through. Absolutely. It's pretty incredible.
I think it's a disillusion. You know, I think when you say we're doing better, I think we have evolved with time, but as a community, it's not better. We just have had some breakthroughs. You know, there are some breaks here, some breaks there. But as a whole, it has really, really dissolved. And I think it, when we look at, like Mr. White talks about the racism, and he made a valid point earlier, a lot of people, they really could care less, white people he mentioned, could care less either way, but it's a benefit to be silent.
Mm-hmm.
So they may not be technically what they call racist or race supremacist or however you want to verbalize it. However, they still benefit from that attitude. And I think that's equally as dangerous as someone out there just outright being honest about how they feel. Because to me, that's
absolutely
more dangerous to me.
Mm-hmm.
You're right, Ms. J. You're right. And you know what I'm saying? And you got the flip side of that, too. That's just like what you were talking about, the communities. In the communities, they got African-Americans in the communities making really, really good money, got good jobs and things of that nature. And that's the same thing with them. It's a solid. They solid. They're not going to speak up. They're not going to say nothing. And the reason for that is because they scared what the white man might say, or they might go or scared that they're going to lose their job. Or, you know, and that's, you know, and really,
Yeah. I think you're absolutely correct. Lose those endorsements or, you know, because we have to be realistic. They still, you know, hold the power, you know, in this circle. Now, economically, we put out the money to hold the power, but we don't claim it. We don't act on it. So, in truth, a lot of people feel, well, you can't make two of them too mad, because if they're too mad, we're going to lose this. I can't be losing my job. I'd earn this money. So everybody is on both sides, just like you said, Mr. John. It's a selfishness to a certain extent on both sides.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So so when is you doing your next video? Are you got anything planned for the near future?
No, not really. I just, you know, if something happens or if I feel inclined, I'll make one. Just when my heart's in it, you know, I try to do one. But, no, I just wanted to say, you said that my videos had made a big difference. I don't know if that's true or not. I know they got viewed a lot, but I can't take credit for any progress that's been made. There's a lot of people doing this work, and I'm not alone. So there's a lot of great voices out there fighting for racial justice, Black Lives Matter, and many great people of color leading the way, and a few white allies also, you know, joining us. Tim Wise is one and that I follow, and Jane Elliott is another one that I'm a big fan of, and many, many people out there doing this work, so I can't take credit. And also I just want to say that I haven't said anything that people of color haven't said for 400 years, so this isn't anything special that I'm saying. It's just not real common to hear white people speak the truth racially. And the other problem is that white people are so threatened by people of color that they tend to not listen when people of color talk about race. So sometimes I can reach white people because I'm white, which is another reason I do this, because of the fear that white people have and the ignorance that white people have. So yeah, that's another reason, but I just want to make that point. And, I don't consider myself a savior. I consider if I'm doing anything, I'm trying to save my own people from ourselves, because white supremacy is self-destructive. It's a very, very ugly thing that affects us so many different ways as white folks. So there's a cost to buying into the lies of white supremacy for us as well. Not only what it does to people of color, you know, but I want white people to understand There's a real cost to this. Number one, it's very dangerous, destructive, as you see the strife that we have because of white supremacy between you know, the police killing people of color and now unarmed, you know, random cops being executed. So there's a cost to all of this. The cost to us socially.
Yes.
Yeah, white stereotypes. Mm-hmm. We're not trustworthy. We're racist. A lot of things because of, in our complacency and our denial and our apathy and our indifference, and our silence, like Ms. Jay had said, that this continues to be a problem for everybody involved. So if anybody's saving anybody, it's people of color saving me by telling me the truth. You know what I mean? I learned from you guys, from hearing about your reality.
And I got to backtrack a little bit, Amy, because based on what you just said, what inspired you to make that move? Because, as you said, you were raised to be racist, so that was what you know. What was a turning point for you to say, hey, this is really not cool, and I need to do something? I mean, because you could have just said it's not cool and did nothing. But what made you say this is not cool, and I'm just going to try to do something? What was that turning point for you?
To be honest, it was abuse, the suffering and abuse and emotional trauma I went through. You know, as a kid, I was very abused, very traumatized kid. I had severe low self-esteem by the time I was 19. I had clinical depression, and finally I got out of the small town in Tennessee, went to college, and got some education. And after the abuse from my childhood, then I wound up being bullied because I was very weak, no self-esteem, no self-respect, depressed, and so I had these roommates in college that saw me as weak and proceeded to bully me. So my freshman year in college, I almost had a nervous breakdown. It got real bad. They would all gang up on me, and I would have left them because I had no sense of self-worth back in those days as a young man. So I was bullied, traumatized again in college, and that just kind of, because luckily I was in a college environment, I was learning things at a very fast rate because I was extremely ignorant growing up. In a very sheltered environment, didn't know anything about the world, and so it was like a shock to my system getting out of Tennessee and being in Savannah, Georgia, where I went to college, and learn everything finally about the world and about reality at an astronomical rate because I knew nothing. I was so ignorant as a kid and so sheltered. So when I got to college, got bullied, and I just one day, I think it was May 19th, 1986 when it hit me. I was 19 years old. It hit me that every single thing I had been through in life was because of prejudice and bigotry and elitism. So in that particular moment, I developed a hate and an understanding for how oppressive and how cruel and how mean and, you know, and evil that bigotry and prejudice can be. So I made a pact with myself and God at that particular moment that I would not, that I was not going to participate in any sort of prejudice, and I was going to fight against it, and I was going to strive to not be a product of my environment and to kind of deprogrammed and unindoctrinated. So I had that mindset and that mentality, and I began to find some confidence. And then a couple of years later, I happened to have the college put me in with a black roommate. First time I'd ever really been exposed to black people that much. We kind of became friends, and because I was open to hating prejudice and wanting to do something to end it, he kind of took me under his wing and taught me about race. And then the other thing that happened that year was him being a black guy in Savannah, Georgia. I'd walk through a neighborhood. He'd walk through the neighborhood. He got arrested twice in Savannah, literally for driving his own car, for walking through a neighborhood. His family had to come down and get him out of jail two times. He was harassed at least on a weekly basis by the police. And so I saw all of this happening to him. He's from Boston, and he is shocked being in the South, going to school, and just witnessing what happened to him gave me a reality. Plus all the knowledge he shared with me, and we're still, 25 years later, we're still best friends to this day. I actually just talked to him today, but he's been a very powerful influence for me, and that's kind of how I got started.
Wow. You had a real life experience. Yeah. That's really good.
Mm-hmm. And one another thing I wanted to ask you, you mentioned something that, you know, white folks are afraid of black folks. What are they afraid of? That's what I can't get. What are they afraid of? I mean,
karma. They're afraid of all the dirty deeds that we did. They know either consciously or subconsciously we did a great dirty deed called slavery. We continue to do a great dirty deed called racial injustice and white supremacy. They know these things, either consciously or unconsciously. They know it's there. They know they benefit from it, whether they want to acknowledge it or whether they're aware of it. They're aware. And so they know that things are unfair. They know that things are unjust. They know that things are unequal. So either subconsciously or consciously, they're worried and they're concerned that there's going to be a big payback. And we've been trained and taught to be scared of black folks. You know, ever since we ended slavery, white people have had the mentality of, oh, God, you know, don't let the black people come get us. And so that's why they had the KKK. That's why the country supported the KKK, you know, and that's why we had Jim Crow. And, you know, we've made some progress as far as legally, but white supremacy is just, it never really goes away. It just kind of evolves with the time, changes with the time, but it's still here. And so white people know that, and they're worried about karma, they're worried about retribution, even though there's no evidence of that, they're still paranoid and worried about it because that's what we've been taught. That's our mentality we've been taught, you know, in our culture. That's part of the indoctrination. It's part of the programming that we receive through education, through media, through culture. All these things are thrown at us as white people to fear black people, you know.
Wow.
You know.
Wow.
You know, all those things that you see, like, well, dude, lock your doors, clench your purse, walk on the other side of the street, all those things that white people do, all those things we've been taught. So, you know.
So that was a taught behavior that you're saying.
All of it is taught.
Yeah, and that's some valid points because, too, and I think also, too, the fear is because, like, a lot of misbeliefs have been passed down for generations, a lot of lies, a lot of untruths, and people feed off of that, you know. Well, you know, that's what I know. And like you said, in your case, you went from a small town to a, you know, Savannah is considered a pretty big city as far as college is concerned, so you change your living. And when you do that, you get into culture shock as well because this ain't how we live at home. You know what I mean? And so I think a lot of times people do get comfortable with their way of living and they don't want to make the changes. Just be honest. They don't want to make them. It's not
their
way.
Go ahead, John. One more thing I want you to explain to the audience. Most people, when you say white supremacists, they think of KKK, skinheads, the Nazis and things. Explain white supremacists, okay, to the audience.
Okay. Well, when I say white supremacy, I'm talking about a culture and a system. I'm talking about institutional racism. I'm talking about how that white people have been taught the lie of supremacy culturally through so many different ways. We've been indoctrinated to believe that we are superior and that people of color are beneath us. So when I say white supremacy, by definition, that myth, that lie of white superiority, that's what I'm referring to. And so, if that answers your question.
Okay. Yeah,
and
well, anyway, we only got a minute.
Go ahead.
I've been criticized a lot about using the term white supremacy from white folks, but I use that because nobody lives under black, brown, or supremacy. Nobody. In this country, we all live with or under white supremacy. And white people like to pretend that they're being oppressed by black people or brown people, but they're not. That's just not reality. We like to deflect and project, but it's not true. So I say white supremacy because it's specific. If I say racism, then white people would say, oh, what about reverse racism? Well, it's not a thing. So I just say white supremacy to make it less complicated.
Absolutely. Okay. Well, we have a minute. We have a minute left on the show, so Ms. J, could you please close us out?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, it was a pleasure to have you on the show. I really enjoyed the dialogue. If I could thank everybody for calling in, we really appreciate you taking this time this afternoon to join us. And if you have one thing to say, Mr. White, positive, you know, to your community or just to people in general, I'm gonna let you, you know, give that last final statement, that positive remark.
I don't know. The only thing I know is, you know, love. We have to love each other. That's the only thing I know. I think it's the most important thing is we have to love each other. Everybody has to love everybody. And that's, and we have to pass that on. So.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And Mr. John, your turn.
Okay. Yes, I want to thank Mr. White for coming on the show. And thank you, Ms. J. for coming on the show too. I'm just messing with you. But anyway, good night, everybody. We really had a good time on the show. Thank you, Mr. White, again. Good night.
All right, thank you,
Mr.
White.
Good night,
everyone.
Thank you, God.
Peace and blessings.
You too.